if you would tell me 10 years, or when I started with Siemens 15 years ago, if you would tell me that we would have social media professionals working in Siemens, I would say, actually, no way. Yeah? Today, it's quite normal that you have a social media professional working in a corporate company. I think we have to be agile and we have to be willing to change what's coming there. We have to adapt to the demand for people like you, or for young engineers or young people like you. What do they want? What are they looking for that we can accommodate this? With the technology we are in, right, either Siemens or Gendarmark, it is changing so fast that you need from day one after university, basically the day after your degree, you're getting your degree, you need to start learning again. The world is changing. You cannot rely on what you have learned in university and then you say, okay, I'm fine for the next 20 years. The learning is a
continuous thing.
You have a responsibility of your employees, right? And I think that is something very important to take care of the employees. Yes, it's maybe salary. Yes, it's maybe environment, but it's also to give them direction.
Claudio Ronaldo is the Senior Vice President at Siemens Digital Industries for the Sub-Saharan Africa. His humor, exceptional leadership style left Yanesh and myself inspired and privileged to sit down with him for an incredible dialogue. He has almost 15 years of experience in the energy industry. Join me as we welcome to the show, Claudio Ronaldo.
Claudio, thank you very much for sitting down with us. I mean, it's such an honor. I have to say, the first time I interacted with Siemens was when I saw my father's phone, back in the days when he had that big phone. And today I have the opportunity to sit with the vice president of the digital side of the sub-Saharan Africa. And it's such an honor. I know you come from Germany. Yanesh, thank you very much for bringing me down here to experience this. How are you doing?
Well, I'm excited. It's you're not doing every day a podcast or a vlog, so I'm excited to be here with you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Proper. I just want to start with, who is Claudio? Where do you come from, and how did you get yourself to this position right now in South Africa?
Okay, so it's a complex question, a complex answer. My name is Claudio.
Yeah.
I'm 40 years old. That is maybe the hard facts. I have three kids and I'm married. And as you can hear, I have maybe a German accent, but I have Italian name because my father is Italian and my mother is German.
Ah.
I'm raised and born, no, I'm born in Germany, but I'm raised really in the two worlds, in Italy and Germany. So I have 50% of each country inside me.
Yeah.
And please don't ask for which soccer team I'm voting for.
Which soccer team?
So I'm choosing who's winning. You know, I
okay. have two. Liverpool, right?
Yeah, maybe Liverpool. And I grew up. If you ask me more, what is my hometown? It's Berlin. I grew up or spent most of my youth in Berlin. That's my hometown. And I joined Siemens after university, or even during university. Did my diploma thesis in Siemens, and then as various steps and various other countries, I ended up here in South Africa, which I really enjoy, and I really like it. And since 1 year now, I'm here, and it's such a great country, and it's really a pleasure to work in that environment, in that country, with all the customers and with all the people. I really enjoy it, yeah.
What did you study?
So I studied business administration or international management, as you would call it, maybe, with a focus or with an MBA on production and industrial science. And in my second university, or in my second study, I studied everything regarding mining, resources, and energy. So everything related to oil and gas, coal, but also diamonds and gold.
Ah, so you come to Johannesburg for the gold, right?
Exactly. So it's a little bit of gold rush, not only, but it's very similar from what I have studied, I find here in South Africa and in the African continent.
Yeah.
what I found interesting when we first met was I got the sense that you understand the culture of business, and obviously you've worked in different countries, and I think that the you have to adapt yourself to different countries based on the different cultures.
Yes.
So I find I have to try and do that, and it's a big part of the things I'm trying to learn. And I found that, I think when we first met you in South Africa for a year or maybe less or something like that, but you were able to switch to a culture that was relatable to us as South Africans.
Yeah.
What's your experience been like from a cultural leadership perspective in different countries? Is it different or is it ultimately the same? If I were striving to be a global leader in different countries, what advice would you give me?
So first of all, yes, there are some differences in the culture, maybe, in different countries, in different areas of the world. So I had to learn what does it mean in South Africa if someone says 100% or now or now. So I had to learn this. And for a German engineer, it's quite
different.
It's a different meaning, 100%, than what it is maybe for a South African person. When it comes to leadership and being around the globe and also working in different countries or living in different countries, I don't think there is a leadership style that is adequate or fits for a country or for a culture. I think that is more human-based, right?
Yep.
I think as a leader, we have the responsibility to adapt our leadership style to the personalities that we have in our teams or in our employees, right?
Yep.
So you cannot say, oh, this is the leadership style that fits for South Africa, or this is the leadership style that fits for Germany. But you can say that you have to have a various flower bouquet of leadership styles that you use to reach to people and to lead them, right? This is what I think, and this is despite the fact if you are in Africa, in Latin America, or somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Wow.
And from a customer perspective, is there a difference in approach and, you know, how customers are from different countries?
Yeah, indeed, because there is, so in detail, there is, every customer is very individual and needs as well a tailor-made approach. Nevertheless, on a higher scale or on a higher altitude, you have obviously customers in region that facing different challenges and different problems and different environments.
Yeah.
So their problems, their challenges are also different, right? I give you an example. I think being a customer in South Africa, in the very south of the world, not being connected or having 11,000 kilometers
distance
to Europe, and you have to cross an ocean to the US, has definitely other challenges that if someone sits in London who has a 6-hour flight to New York.
Yep.
I think customers around the globe have different environments for financing, which other ones have, or which gives them different headaches or different challenges. So yeah, you see that. You see that character maybe of a customer, but in the end, every customer is really individual and you need to approach them and you have to give them a tailor-made approach.
Yeah.
Wow. You mentioned a part that I was interested in when you said 100% in Germany means something completely different than South Africa. Can you give me an example of what it means in Germany as opposed to what it would mean in South Africa?
Well, it's very simple. When you tell someone 100%, then that will be received as really 100%, no deviation, not 99.9. It is 100%. It's a very strong statement.
Yeah.
That means really it is on the dot. Where in South Africa, maybe it is not so much 100%. It's maybe, okay, let's see. We're going in the right direction. And maybe it's only 80%.
Yeah.
And everyone is fine with that.
Yeah.
Not judging this. It's just a different perceiving, right?
Mm.
And it's a different translation.
Yeah, like I guess I'm coming now, right?
I'm coming now, yeah.
Could so mean tomorrow, it could mean in 2 minutes, it could mean anything.
You're right, so there is now, there's now, there's just now.
Yeah.
So you have those three, once you understand that, right? And I think the trick is, so I face this with humor, as you can see. It doesn't make sense to take my understanding from Germany or from Europe and try to implement it in South Africa. I try to face this with humor and then you adapt.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to change it to what you think. So that is really the key for it. Yeah.
So when we get to your passions, especially with business development, right? I just want to find out, what are some of your responsibilities in your current role? And I'm asking this because when someone is a CEO, a vice president, or an innovations director, we think we know what they do. But can you just tell us what you actually do so that we have an understanding of what that means?
Well, I think it's you cannot answer this with one sentence. It's really various. I think you are, on one hand, and this is, I'm putting that first, is you have a responsibility of your employees, right? And I think that is something very important to take care of the employees. Yes, it's maybe salary. Yes, it's maybe environment. But it's also to give them direction, give them a purpose, what they're doing every day, right? We are spending 40, 50 hours a week with the company. If I have good employees or happy employees, satisfied employees that love to work for Siemens, then they are able to serve the customer in a proper way, right? So for me, that is key. Besides that, obviously, I'm exposed to the KPIs that we have in economy, which is selling, which is creating revenue, making profit, and accommodating our shareholders. So that is also, can also not be forgotten, right? Besides that, I think this all reflects into the day-to-day business, right? And it can be a simple Teams call with someone and asking how the family is and is everything okay? And it ends up into board meetings with Munich in Germany and explaining my KPIs. So that is the variance of my day-to-day business. Yeah.
Wow. So one of the things that I've learned starting and trying to work up the ranks is, as you move up the ranks, your job responsibilities gets grayer and grayer and more undefined. And along with that also becomes less and less people to lean on. More and more people are leaning on you for advice, leadership, etc., etc. So I think it can get quite lonely on top. So everyone sees the main guy on top and they're supposed to be leading and doing everything, and you get the feeling that everyone's looking to you for answers for everything. So it can get lonely, right?
That's
and it can
right,
get
yeah.
quite stressful. we feel it, we live it, right?
Yes.
So the question is, how do you deal with that outside of work? What's your de-stressor? What do you love to do outside of work?
So that is a very good question. Maybe also to add to the previous question first, you also want to give them not only the employees, but the market, yourself, the company, a strategy and answers they're looking for. And the loneliness is not necessarily the loneliness that we see that you don't have friends anymore.
No, no, exactly. It's
different. Or you don't have people around you.
Yeah.
Believe me, you have a lot of people around you.
Yeah.
But it's more on, oh, they really want an answer from me and there's no one. So I only have the answer. I have to make the decision alone.
Yes.
No one else is there to
That's exactly what I mean by that loneliness.
Exactly. First of all, I try to compensate this with my leadership style. And maybe we speak later about it, but I try to be transparent. I try to not make lonely decisions. I'm trying to get people involved and making joint decision that carries then later the decision. And then in private, first of all, I have 3 kids.
Enough exercise then.
There's enough to do, let me put it this way, after working hours.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, sometimes I feel, I also find it very relaxing that sometimes I'm only the dad and they ruling me and they make the decision for me and I'm just there. But obviously it's on a serious note, I think you need to find a balance.
Yeah.
And the balance is that for me it is, you have to be a physical balance, that means you need to do sport, you need to exercise, whatever it is. It is so important to have a healthy body. Yeah. Second, I think you need a mental recovery. And that can be really going in a theater, reading a book, talking about something totally different than maybe PLCs or automation in the industry. And then last but not least, for me, I find I have to have, or I found another passion in private, which is the mountaineering and climbing mountains, which is another passion I'm burning for. Yeah. And this helps me to keep that balance. Yeah. We cannot work 24/7 around the clock.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that talking about passion, one of the things that fascinates me is my teacher when I was in grade 10, I'm very young, 23. My teacher when I was in grade 10 used to say, you're gonna work for a job that has not been created yet. And I was like, this guy, what is he saying? And it's true. Yes. Today it's true.
Yes.
So now as leaders, how do you guys prepare for the next 10 years for jobs that don't exist today? And how do you navigate the strategy, the thinking, the framework of thinking to somewhat have a understanding of what that looks like to both you and Yanish?
Wow, that is a very good question. And it is a very complex answer again. So let me, before I answer the question, let me share something what I experienced. So I'm getting a CV from a young student. He's 19 years old. He wants to work for Siemens. And he has not studied anything engineering. He comes from the Georgetown University. And after the first round and 1 hour of interview, I did not understand what he's studying. I could not, I understand the title what he's studying, but I could not understand the content. So I asked him in the second round to bring me his schedule, his show me what kind of courses you have so I can get a grip on. It was something with social, political, environment, society title. And then I found, for example, that they're learning empires. So they had for a semester, they studied empires. In my old mindset, when I went to school, it was for me clear. You learn which emperor was at which time, and which battle was at which time. So I asked them, I said, you're learning about the Roman Empire and the British Empire and the Ottoman Empire and all that. And he says, no, we are learning about this, but we are learning the rise and the fall and the dynamics. So I asked him, I said, so does this help you, you know? And then he said, yeah, because today we have also empires like the Googles, like the Apples, like the Facebooks. And it made sense. It was a totally new concept of learning. They're not learning content anymore. They're learning skills, soft skills, solutions. They learn to be agile. They learn change management. You don't have to tell them what change management is or a changing environment. They have inhaled that very much.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? So you have now two worlds, right? You have a 175 years old Siemens engineering German company, and you have those new thinking, new mindset, new skill trained people from university. So I think we as a company, so it's a two-way street. I think we as a company, we have to change and we have to accommodate that. We also don't know which jobs are there in 5 years or 10 years. If you would tell me 10 years, or when I started with Siemens 15 years ago, if you would tell me that we would have social media professionals working in Siemens, I would say, actually, no way. Yeah? Today, it's quite normal that you have a social media professional working in a corporate company. I think we have to be agile and we have to be willing to change what's coming there. We have to adapt to the demand for people like you or for young engineers or young people like you. What do they want? What are they looking for that we can accommodate this? And the other way is around is not seeing everything or from the other generation, from the new generation, also to understand in what kind of environment they are going into and not expecting everywhere the Google and the Facebook environment and understanding, hey, I'm going to Siemens, I can make a change, I can make an impact, but it is an engineering company that is also transforming So that if those two mindsets are coming together, then it's a success because both can learn.
Yeah.
This is what I think.
Finish.
Are you asking me hard questions? But I get, I agree 100% with what Claudio is saying. I think that if I've got like two hats on, I have got a father hat. So the question is what do I teach my daughter so that one day she can be happy and successful in whatever she defines as successful, because we don't know what's going to happen in 5 years. How do I know what's going to happen in 15 years, right?
Yeah.
at the same time, we have a company not 175 years old, 30 years old, and we're also stuck in our ways, and we've also been doing things a certain way continuously, and we've grown up in a mindset and a culture where we don't want to make mistakes. And I think that's the key thing, I think, where we have to change. We have to accept, in order to adapt and move, mistakes are going to happen. In fact, I think we have to encourage mistakes in our business. And if we can allow people a safe space in a relatively controlled way, you can't obviously make huge mistakes and then destroy everything, blow up a production line, right? But you need to allow and enable young people to experiment and try new things. And I think that's how you will direct the future of the organization, and then you find different talents. If you said 2 years ago to me that we're going to start a podcast, no ways, no chance. Yeah. We had this conversation. So I think creating an environment where mistakes can happen and it's actually encouraged, because if you make a mistake, you're trying something different. And then also grit. So I think that people have a lot of insecurities around, I want to have my knowledge and I want to hold it. And if you want to go and learn something new, if I'm not going to be an expert, I'm not going to try it. So in order for you to try something new that you're not good at, like a podcast, right? Because what do we know about podcasting, but we're trying it. You need to have some level of grit to try it. And that means you need an internal confidence to be okay with making a mistake. And I think you just have to try and adapt and balance the process. And I think one other thing you alluded to is, I think young people joining an organization want to join an organization with purpose.
Yeah.
So it's no longer purely profit, bottom line, KPI, how much you made on the bottom line. But along with that is things like environment and what are you doing for society. Those are important things, and young people want to belong to that. That's my observation.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure in 6 months it's going to change.
Yeah. I think the what you said, the failure culture is a key to success. Yeah. You know, I really believe that. If you don't make failures, you cannot learn.
Yeah, you're not trying.
You need to have failures. And we have to make, in companies, we need to understand that this is needed. It's even wanted.
Yep.
To make failures, to learn and to get better. And this comes again with another ability that people need to bring on the table for both sides, is we need, with the technology we are in, right, either Siemens or Gendermark, it is changing so fast that you need, from day one after university, basically the day after your degree, you're getting your degree, you need to start learning again.
Yep.
The world is changing. You cannot rely on what you have learned in university and then you say, okay, I'm fine for the next 20 years. The learning is a
continuous thing.
Yep.
Yeah. And you need to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a grit, that's a, you know, internal emotional intelligence that's actually probably more important than the technical skill. What's your take? Because we are on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
Right? You're coming up the ranks. What would it be, what's important for you from a Gendermark, a Siemens, that would be interesting for you to work at? Obviously salary, experience, you don't want to work in a terrible environment where people are shouting at you, that's clear. What else is interesting for a young person like you to look at when you're looking at companies to work at?
So the first thing I think about, actually, my friends and I were having this conversation and we realized that we don't represent the demographics of most of the youth. So I'm just representing the group of my friends.
Okay,
and
yeah,
what I think,
yeah,
from those guys. I think it's important to work with people that you are convinced that 10 years, 15 years from now, you'll be better in anything. And if they keep on driving that in you, you almost, it's like a magnet. You're drawn to them because those leaders are having your best interest at heart. It could be a fallacy, right? It could be an illusion. But at least while I'm at Gendermark or working with you 20 years, 15 years, I have this sense that the guy is trying to align my strengths with a vision that he has or could have, right? Not the other way around. So sometimes you have a vision and I have to conform to it. And I wouldn't want to work in a place like that. I want to work in a place where I have a feeling that the leader has a vision, but he's watching me and listening to where my strengths are and is trying to steer those strengths and align it with the vision. And I think that presents a big opportunity because you could start as a junior, and because of your strengths, then you're undeniable. Then you start progressing and you grow beyond the company. And they're not insecure about that from a leadership perspective. I think that for me and my friends, that's what attracts us, attracts me to Agenda Mark.
Is it an individual? So before we knew each other, right?
Yeah.
So what would a company X have to portray for you to say, I want to go work for that company?
Culture, like an open culture of freedom. I think one of the things that what Instagram the social media world, what it has shown us young people is that you can be yourself and still produce. You don't have to wear a certain way, behave a certain, sound a certain way. And when you look at a company and it feels like you can be yourself there, then you're like, I would like to work there. Okay. It's like how all of us want to work for Google, or people think Google is a open environment, but not really. So it's that. Okay. It's colorful. It's open. It's just I think so. Right. So from a let's assume your next customer is watching in your division, because the companies are big, right? In the division that you're working in or at, what is your offering? As dumb and as simple as it can be, what are you selling?
So I think first we need to understand the relationship between Gendermark and Siemens.
Yes.
Which is, you can say, a partnership, right? Yeah. Is with our technology, the automation technology, a motor, a drive, a PLC, an instrument. I'm trying to make it very simple.
Software.
With our products, we are enabling, or we are helping, supporting Gendermark to perform on the global market and to sell their products or their solutions that they have. And this is where our partnership first comes in, that my products that I have, or software, are helping Gendermark to be a very successful player globally. But I'm pretty sure Inesh can answer, what are they doing? Not answering this for him.
What do we do?
Yes.
Click on the link below. We design and build machines that obviously support the manufacturing of automotive components. And we've been doing that for a long time. And obviously an important part is, you alluded to it earlier, is how you transition into this new world. And in addition to let's call it the bricks and mortar business, about building production lines that support our customers in building their products using Siemens, predominantly Siemens equipment, that actually make our production lines more effective, more efficient, which is great. We want to transition into a digital business very similar to Siemens, which is a question that we can talk about. That allows us to obviously grow our business from a scalability perspective to more customers, selling digital products that are enabling production lines to be more effective, more efficient. And also looking into the future, especially from an African perspective, a Southeast Asia perspective, South America perspective, where population growth is going to be ongoing for the next at least 10 to 20 years. How do we unlock the human capital using digital products on production lines? Because what we believe is that the in order to create opportunities for people, in order for economies to grow, it's going to be centered around manufacturing. At the underpinning of any strong economy is manufacturing. And we have this, what some people view as a disadvantage, but we view as an advantage, to human capital. So how do we create digital products to unlock human capital in these countries, continents, that make them efficient, effective? And I think one thing human capital does present in factories is flexibility.
Wow.
So one day I can make a Siemens drive, and the next day on the same production line I can make a gearbox. If it was fully automated, that would be very difficult too and very expensive. But you know, manual assembly processes enable us to be able to be dynamic and flexible and have custom Nike shoes.
Yeah. From a gender perspective, I'm in it, so I get to see the transition from hardware to software as we are trying to or moving towards software. For Siemens, how was that journey to move from a hardware offering business to now a software offering?
So we are not really moving from hardware to software.
Yeah, it's in addition
and
to
and
it.
We're leaving the hardware behind. The hardware is an element, a needed element that you can speak software. So what it means is that our hardware, a drive, a motor, a controller, a PLC, will always be in our heart, and we always will develop further those hardware technology. So that is one. Second, the software is really the layer above it, to make it more digital, to make it intelligent, to use the entire capabilities, to gain value, to increase output, or even to make things more efficient, less CO2 demanding. I'm not sure if this is the right word. So we are transforming, but we are not leaving behind hardware.
Yeah.
Besides that, obviously, yeah, it's a change. It's a change because it's a different approach to the customer. It's different people we are talking with. It's new technology. It is sometimes walking a little bit into the dark together with the customer, because we do not know where this will end up, right? Or what is the real goal. And therefore, yeah, there are some challenges and there are some difficulties, but it goes in a very fast and rapid way, yeah, I have to say.
So from our experience, obviously, as we transition, like you said, not away from hardware, but in addition to software, and specifically around subscription, right? So I think there's the ideal case, and whether we get there or not, like you say, who knows, is to be able to sell subscription services on top of the hardware. And from our experience, I think some of our customers, big and small, are not quite ready for that transition, both from a CapEx, OpEx perspective, as well as from a mindset perspective. What's your experience been like?
So again, the world and the customer landscape or the industry landscape is very much heterogeneous. So you see some regions in the world and some customer that are very advanced. They have embraced that new way of doing business very much, and they have embedded it, and they're digital, and they're going with software, and they're having new business models applied. And then on the other hand, you have slower industries, you have more conservative customers that are not yet ready, maybe with their business model, with their mindset, with their understanding, which is not a finger pointing or blame. It's more on, it's not so easy to describe in that new digital software world the benefit. It's intangible a little bit, yeah? So it takes a little bit of time, trust, and smaller steps before you see the value and the benefits of a new business model as a service or software as a service, the digitalization. I'll give you an example. Our CEO has described it very, very nice in the picture, and says it is like a tomato sauce bottle that you open fresh, and you want to get some tomato sauce on the plate, and it's not coming out, and you're trying hard, and then a little bit comes, but it's not enough, and you try, and then out of the blue, everything comes out. And I think we are seeing that moment right now, because you could see the front runner in the industries and the front runners and customers, they have that benefit. They see the value of new business models, of new digitalization of software. And I think now you see really that flow that people are going after it. And to answer your question, yeah, absolutely. It will become a standard. Digitalization will not go away. Yep. We are in the beginning. Software is absolutely, how to say, you say ABC and then software, and this is exactly that flow. It will always be part of it. Yep. And the new business models will apply, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
On, I think 2 days ago, we were opening controls department. We built a new office, and Yanesh was giving a talk to the guys, and he mentioned something that really, really got me thinking about the psychology of customers. Can you just share that with us, just a tiny bit?
So in our transition towards these digital businesses, software as a service, mm-hmm. there's one application we've created called Odin Maintenance,
yes.
which is serving. The goal is to try and digitize the preventative maintenance process. Mm-hmm. So you have typically a piece of paper that's printed out on a, for a person, they go, they do the task, they tick it, then you have a data capturer that basically records the data, and then at the end of the month somebody produces a graph to say good or bad, right?
Yes.
That's the scenario in many factories around the world.
Manual.
Very
analog.
Manual, completely. And what typically happened, what we thought was a good idea, was let's digitize it. It's not that difficult. We have existing customers. We could augment our existing customer base by selling this product, etc. So we created this product. It took us a year and a half, 2 years. Technically, ticks all the boxes. It does.
Yeah.
I mean, deep research into what the customer wants. How is it going to help? Even interviewing the maintenance guys. Where do you want the button? We did all of that. So we ticked it, I would say, 90% on the technical side. Even commercially, the business model was subscription per asset, makes perfect
excellent.
Sense.
Excellent.
So we deployed in a few customers. They don't use it.
And why?
Exactly. And so the what we're now learning is this idea of we've made a mistake now. I need to accept that. We didn't touch all of the topics. And I think what we missed was understanding the psychology of the user. So we addressed it from a very engineering perspective. This is the problem, this is the solution. Financially, finance guys are happy, it should work. What we didn't understand is the mindset of the technician that's always on the back foot. They're always trying, they're always too late, too slow, and why did it break? That's the mindset. So our tool was not actually helping them solve the root of the problem, which is trying to make their lives easier. All we did was they now could sit at the lunch table, click the cell phone with the buttons, and not do the maintenance. So the real problem was actually not the digitization. It was actually understanding the psychology of the maintenance technician and the pains that they go through, and we thought creating a digital tool will solve it, and we actually haven't.
But is this not a great example of failure culture?
100%.
Is this not, you need to have that, you need to accept this, if you transform this knowledge into a positive view, you can really learn about it. Yeah?
So the product manager, Yaku, he was distraught, completely upset. Mm. He was like wanting to fall on his sword, right?
Because he failed.
Exactly. Mm. So I called him in, I said, let's celebrate this moment. And I said, congratulations, because now we're one step closer to really understanding the problem. And had you not made these things,
you would never go
would
to
never
the score.
Be that, yeah. And actually, now we look at it from a different lens, and we look at all of the competing products. They're making the same mistake. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they've accepted that is wrong. At least from our side, we've accepted it's wrong. We don't know exactly what to do. We have some thoughts and ideas of how to really engage with the human that's doing the job. And so we'll move closer towards, hopefully, the next iteration will be closer. Yes.
And if you are completing the next sprint, you don't know what you discover then after.
Exactly.
So you can be even excited about it.
Yeah.
It will be.
So my words to him were, quickly, let's fail again.
Yeah.
And I think he felt a little bit better after that, but he was literally down about the fact that, okay, the engagement is not what we planned.
But you see, I think this is the right attitude to give this comfort, right? And this protection zone or this cushion where you can fall on.
Yeah.
That you don't blame him or you don't judge in a negative way and doing the opposite, saying, this is great. Look at the positive things that came out. Mm. I think every rocket launch that failed brought them nearer to shoot someone to the moon.
Exactly.
And you have to have that. So not bad. It's good. Let's take out the positive things or play on the strength. and learn. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a very great example, I have to say.
And I wish I could stay here and say we solved it, but honestly,
in the next in part two.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, for me, I have two industry leaders, right? And I'm very interested for the next upcoming young person who doesn't know what to do. What career advice would you give them from a Siemens perspective, in your journey, and from a Gendarmerie perspective?
So first of all, if you are a young engineer in South Africa, don't put your application somewhere else than to Gendarmerie or to Siemens. So that is the first advice we have to give them.
Yeah.
So what kind of advice? You know, we already mentioned a couple of, right? First of all, I think don't stop learning. With day one coming out of university, continue with your learning journey until the end, literally to your life. This is the first thing. The second thing is, be humble to yourself. Allow yourself to be humble. And don't forget, with all the well-educated or the knowledge that you have and what you want to do and the ambition you have, stay humble, but also don't forget there's always a component that I call them homework. Some of the things you have to bring you have to have in your career or an attitude that is needed, although you don't like it maybe. For example, being on time, being polite, respect people around you, have the ownership for what you do, work hard also sometimes. Not everything is fluffy and it's nice and it is, let's call the word Google, yeah, environment. Sometimes it's tough, sometimes it's hard. And accept that there will be pain, sweat, tears, blood. It sounds dramatic, but sometimes it is really, and also it's frustrated sometimes. But if you have this, if you have those values, being humble, having this learning attitude, having that ownership, and having that accountability, for what you do, then I think, combined with the knowledge that you have and that drive from the new generation, the red carpet is rolled out, yeah, and we are embracing it. We are looking for such a people that having that attitude or that mindset.
Yeah, I would 100%. So I think that the what Claudio said is 100%. What I would add to that is know your passion. And the reason why I think it's a cliche, right? Do what you're passionate about. But the reason why I say that is so critical and so important is because when you're bleeding, as Claudio says, and things are tough, if you're doing what you're passionate about, it's worth it. Yes. If when things are tough and you're doing things that you're not passionate about, it's terrible. And it's never sustainable. You're never going to keep doing it. And in order for it to be great and amazing, you got to keep doing it, keep doing it, keep making mistakes, keep going, keep going, keep going. And you can only do that with the energy around what you're passionate about. So focus on that. You can study engineering, but you might be passionate about playing guitar. Focus on the guitar, go through
exactly.
It, fail and fail and fail. The failure is much better because it's taking you closer to your dream and your destiny. Don't do something because that's the right career path, because that's where you're going to make money. That's not sustainable. Because things are tough. One thing I would disagree with is it's more tough than good, to be honest. It is
absolutely
80% pain, but it's got to be worth it because it's your passion. And I'm lucky that I was actually pretty bad at most things except one, like the tech stuff. So my passion was aligned there and I could figure it out. But I see many, many, many young people good at many things, which is actually a disadvantage because now you don't know what it is that you actually like.
Yeah. The one last thing is,
I've got one more question, by the way.
Yeah. The one other thing is, young people have an expectation of how they want the older generation to adapt to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are boisterous about it. I want this and I want, and there's a culture of expectation and entitlement with us, this upcoming generation. What are some of the things that you guys see in us and you say that is not going to get you where you're trying to go or you think you want to go?
what I experienced, I can only speak from experience. I think what Dinesh has said is very much right. I think there must be, we need to understand that we do not have good times all the times. There's a lot of work, a lot of training, a lot of pain or exercise and failure and frustration for some of the glory moments, right? If you take rugby players, yeah, we are in South Africa now. This looks awesome, right? When they go into the stadium and they have this atmosphere this evening, and what I learned beating New Zealand after 8 years, it's, I believe, a fantastic moment. So the mistake that some people are doing, or the generation, is thinking this is how it is, and this is the this is normal. But no one has filmed or have showed them the weeks, the months, the hours, the painful training, the hard work, which is there for this moment. And I think that is also in your career. You have great moments, and some things are really wow. And I think for Gendermark as well, when you guys have finished a line with a customer, it's a beautiful moment, yeah, to cut the ribbon, and it runs, right? And all this technology comes together, but no one actually is seeing the 6 months frustration with commissioning,
yeah,
it.
100%.
And I think this is something that the generation needs to understand. Not everything is purple in the cloud and happiness. There's also hard work behind.
Yep.
This is what I think. I hope it's, yep, not too rough, but this is what I think could be a problem.
Yeah, you know, Instagram has got that beautification button. The world is not like that. So we see that, and obviously we're all driven by what we see on the internet, but you only show the good things. And like Claudia, yes, says, the 80 minutes of glory when we beat New Zealand is only 80 minutes, but there's been hundreds of years behind that to get to that 80 minutes. But on Instagram, you only see the 80 minutes.
Yes, with a nice filter.
Yeah, with the beautification
with a beautiful
on it,
filter.
Right?
So we have the, maybe to share, maybe an outcome is, I suggest, we're having shadowing, we're calling it shadowing, right? Where an employee can choose a day and he follows me, for example, or he follows his boss to see what are they doing. And then there's already a big awakening that the day does not start at 9 o'clock, it starts somehow at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And the phone calls are not in a lounge on an airport, how movies are showing that. It is really between two calls, you have another call, in between you have to do mails, and then you. Let me put it this way, when you are in a role where I am, or Yanesh, it's very rare someone is calling you to tell you that everything is fine.
Yeah.
So most likely every call is a problem, yeah, and it has an issue. So, and then they wake up and they're saying, oh wow, I have not expected that. I think that is maybe an advice to the viewer.
Yeah.
Do this, go to a company and ask them, can I shadow you for a day or something? I think this would be
a good
experience. Yeah.
So Claudia, there's a lot of talk around EVs and or new energy vehicles into the future. And thanks for the conference that you guys hosted 2 weeks ago. The talk from PwC was really interesting. And in that graph, that has etched in my mind about the next 10 years, what the percentages are going to look like in terms of adoption of new, mm-hmm, energy vehicles. And there was obviously a clear dominance between Europe and China.
Yes.
As percentages of people of adoption. What's your take from a global perspective? Do you think that this is a hype curve that's going to go down? Is it a thing that's going to happen? Will it be isolated? Just what's your view from a let's say a Siemens perspective, a Claudio perspective?
On the electrical vehicle or on the new
energy vehicle?
New energy vehicle.
Yeah.
So I think we are seeing an electrical vehicle battery hype right now. So
yep.
I hope that is clear. I've,
yep,
choose the words. What I see 10 years, 15 years from a personal perspective, from a Siemens perspective, I think we have to go away with the mindset that there was combustion engine and now it's battery. I think we will have, again, we have to live with the undefined or with a variety of different technologies that's serving us, right? You will have in 10 years battery vehicles. They will have absolutely their place. They will not go away. You will have hybrid cars or hydrogen cars that is made for different usage. The technology is becoming more reliable. The technology becomes more efficient. So you will see that dominance as well. But you will have as well a market still for combustion engine. Because when you are driving, for example, in the Kalahari, it will be very difficult to find a charger.
Yeah.
And you have to make a long distance, or in the mining industry, you maybe need still a combustion engine with classical fuel. So I think this is where we're going. We will see different kind of technologies in vehicles that is serving us for our purpose. That is one. For Siemens, we are diverse and we are following almost every trend in that, and we are trying to accommodate first of all the production with our technology, but as well we are a player when it comes to the chargers and fast chargers, and there we had the latest announcement that we have bought the market leader in induction charging, where you don't charge anymore with a cable into your car. I think that is as well a transition.
Yep.
You will see plates in your garage where you drive the car on it, and it will be an induction charger like you have it with your mobile phone right now. So I think, again, there will be various technologies, and also we should not make a mistake that we think this is how it will be in 10 years. Let's be open, let's work with the technology. I do not know where the battery technology is in 10 years, and maybe that statement is totally wrong. I do not know which other technologies are coming. Synthetic fuels, we have not spoken about that. Also new energy fuels. So I think stay agile, adapt to the challenge, and go with the flow. But for now, battery is very much the technology, and it will go fast and it will go quick. And then it will be followed by hydrogen.
What one takeaway that I took from the PwC presentation, and I think it was 22 or 24% of emissions are a result of internal combustion engines. So then I was thinking when I looked at that slide, I said, okay, 22% internal combustion engine contribution to greenhouse gases.
Mm-hmm.
So if in 2035, that graph was kind of alluding to 50% of the market switches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, we sold 11%. right, of the or 12%, whatever the number was, of emissions,
yes,
as a whole. And I'm just questioning, it's not a question, it's just a statement from my side, is 11% solved by 80% of the hype, right? So there's a whole billions and billions and billions being put to solve the 11%. What about the other 80%? Is there no marketing campaign to rather have a Zoom meeting, don't fly? Is that maybe a better use of the billions and billions being spent, because actually there's 80% of the problem still exists, even when we get to 2035 and we get to 50% transition to new energy vehicles, hydrogen battery doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Maybe with the electrical vehicle, we're also making a mistake. This is my view, that we're all only comparing it with the reduction of CO2. Mm. But maybe there's more than just CO2 reduction with those electrical vehicle, noise emission in cities. Can you imagine, as I spoke in Oslo or in Johannesburg or in Port Elizabeth, no cars making noise anymore. How lovely would that be to live there? Pollution is another dust. Is another example. So it's a little bit too easy only to say how much does this bring me in CO2. We have to see it also from a society and a broader environment effect. And then another thing I would like to share is, there is a webpage. Maybe we can add this in the link, where you can calculate your CO2 footprint. right?
As an individual.
As an individual.
Okay.
So it gives you an indication how bad is your footprint CO2. Because very often, or I cannot say what my footprint is. And there was an interesting part. So our family has only one car. We don't have two or three cars. Okay, I thought I'm already on a good note. We are trying to cook itself at home. We are trying to have a sustainable or having an efficient heating or cooling system in place and all that. And we're buying regional and all that. And this was all good. So the footstep that you have, right, shows you the progress. And how much meat you eat, yeah? Meat is also a producer. And then there's a last question. How often do you fly? And I realized whatever you put in the first 8, 9, 10, 12 questions is irrelevant if you put, I'm flying 4 times a year, because it kills the complete statistics. Yeah.
Exactly, that was my point, right?
So the question is, sometimes I have the feeling we are looking in, not into the wrong, but maybe there must be other elements.
Yeah.
Bring exactly. into focus, yeah, where we can save also CO2 if we are talking about
that. Yeah, that's exactly my point. There's still 80% of the battle, even when we get to 50% energy vehicles.
Exactly. So I'm saying sometimes converting a combustion engine into a battery vehicle does not solve the climate change.
No.
it contributes, but it doesn't change. Yeah. There's more to do.
Yeah. We are on the same page.
Claudio, thank you very much for having us. And it's such an honor for me, and I think it is for Yanesh too. Maybe a little bit more for me than it is for him.
No, it is. Absolutely, it is.
The last question that I have for you is, what do you want your legacy to be, your personal legacy?
You mean when I turn around and I look back?
Yeah. Yes.
Privately or in business? Or in life, or what?
Whichever one you're comfortable sharing.
Privately, I would like to gear up my kids and to skill them that they have, they can enjoy their life after I'm gone. Yeah. So I would like to give them all the skills, the mindset, the right values, that they have a fantastic life, that they can choose by themselves after I'm disappearing. In business, I would like that people are saying, or the people see my era, that this was a good leadership. We have enjoyed it, we had fun in our life, and I contributed to that. I would like that everyone has a happy day when they come to work, yeah, or is enjoying it. And if I can make a little small contribution to it, I have everything achieved already, and that's really what I'm striving for, making customer employees a little bit more happy and a little bit more enjoyable, right? And working and integrating the technology that we have, and I believe in that technology, and bring it to the society and make the world a little bit better, just a little bit, you know, and because we are 8 billion in the planet, and if everyone makes it a little bit better, we have a better world. That's what I think, yeah.